Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, January 7th, 2022. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me with his reporting and analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew, and Happy New Year.
Hey there, Chris, and Happy New Year to you as well.
We are back after a long holiday break, Andrew, but it really wasn't much of a break, though. Plenty of news to report since we last spoke, and of course, there's COVID, too.
Oh, and it's getting kind of old, isn't it, at this point? I mean, I remember it was, what, back in March and April of 2020, we'd pretty much start every podcast with a check-in, like for how we were doing during our lockdowns. And here we are, what, 19 months later, and cases are just out of control, and life just feels 100 miles from normal. I'll take this opportunity to wish health and safety on all of our listeners out there. I hope they're coping with this okay. Good opportunity for me to offer my PSA. Please, if you're not vaccinated and get boosted as well. But the good news is, this time around with COVID, is that we're at least a bit better prepared with vaccines. You know, we have PPE and there's some understanding of how the virus works now. And in the publishing community, we also know that come what may, we can get the job done, right? 2021 was another remarkable year in terms of sales, even with COVID still raging. But it's also clear that nothing in the publishing world is going according to plan. You know, our listeners will recall that in the summer and early fall, we talked about how publishers were going to be returning to the office and there was the potential for in-person book fairs and how life was starting to feel a little bit normal again. Well, that's all on hold. This week, you know, Hachette CEO Michael Peach said in a letter to staff that they won't be coming back to the office and that everything is sort of back up in the air. Other CEOs have said the same thing. You can read about that on the Publishers Weekly site now. The point is that here we are, 2022 has just opened, and for the publishing industry, at least the major publishers here in New York, no one's going back to the office just yet. And there are still serious concerns about things like the effect of supply chain disruptions and worker shortages. And of course, we have this spike in inflation now that could put some price pressure on books going forward. So, yeah, after two very strong years of sales and of coping with COVID the best we could, 2022 is still very much up in the air. And, you know, if you'd asked me back in 2020 when we were checking in with each other at the beginning of our podcasts, I would have been certain back in March of April of 2020 that by 2022, COVID-19 would be mostly in the rear view. But here we are, January 2022, and I honestly have no idea what the year ahead holds.
And as you mentioned, though, Andrew, throughout 2021, book sales continued their pandemic uptick. Any sense yet of how the December numbers might look?
Yeah, they're going to look pretty good. You know, according to NPD BookScan, sales for this December were pretty much on par with 2020, maybe just a little bit off. But, you know, it's a fairly strong finish for 2021 that's going to leave print sales, according to NPD BookScan, up about 9% over 2020. And 2020, of course, was up about 12% over 2019. So from 2019 to 2021, during this pandemic period, the industry has managed to stuff about a decade's worth of growth into a two-year period. So not bad, not bad at all. And then we have the AAP StatShot statistics for November, which is the most recent month they have reporting for. And they also suggest a very strong 2021. Trade sales, for example, hit another record high. They were up about 6.7%, I believe, from 2020, with the first 11 months of 2021 in the books. The year is already ahead of 2020. So 2021, 11 months of 2021, is already ahead of where we finished 2020. Once again, not bad. The AAP has sales up about 13%, I think, through the first 11 months of the year. Now, that has something to do with people shopping early for fear of supply chain disruptions. So I think we can reasonably expect that December sales are going to come in a bit lower. That was reflected, I think, in the NPD stats. But even with a December dip in 2021, the industry is on track for our second year of double-digit growth. And again, just remarkable. And I think the best news maybe about all these gains is that they really do appear to be on terra firma. You know, month in and month out, we have seen that the gains were paced by people actually reading more fiction, for example, in addition to some big books and blockbuster political books, for example. But the fiction numbers have really rebounded after years of decline. And that is really encouraging because it suggests that these gains are not fad driven, right? For example, this surge is not about the adult coloring books fad, which, you know, our listeners will remember spiked and dominated the headlines for a few years ago. This surge that we're having now actually appears to be about reading. Now, the last question, of course, is whether this is about existing readers buying more books and reading more books, or whether over this last 2 years of growth, we've gained significant or at least some new readers. And I don't think we can really know that until people get back to some semblance of normal, until they get back to their offices and back to their commutes and back to their routines. So maybe we'll start to see some of this in 2022. Maybe we'll start to get past COVID in 2022. But again, given where we are right now, I hope you'll forgive me if I don't make a prediction.
Well, you are forgiven for that, Andrew, this time anyway. And right before the year ended, New York Governor Kathy Hochul vetoed New York's library ebook law.
Yeah, so this is disappointing news for library supporters and really good news for the major publishers, is New York Governor Kathy Hochul on December 29th. Vetoed New York's library ebook bill just hours before it was set to go into effect. Now, the bill is currently back with the legislature where it's tabled and next steps are currently under discussion. You could read a little bit about that on the PW site. And I have to say the veto was not unexpected after the AAP had filed suit in Maryland. In the days before the veto, sources told me to actually expect one because the litigation in Maryland had apparently sparked some concern in the governor's office. And of course, there was a last-minute lobbying effort by the AAP that involved an array of high-powered New York-based industry groups. So that surely had an effect on the governor's thinking as well. I think what's surprising, though, for observers is that the veto comes despite really strong grassroots support for the bill. You know, our listeners will remember that in June, this bill passed the New York State Senate and Assembly pretty much unanimously. It passed the Assembly 148-0, and it passed the Senate 62-1. But as our listeners also know, the Association of American Publishers on December 9th filed a federal lawsuit that seeks to block implementation of a similar library ebook law in Maryland on grounds that these kinds of state laws are preempted by the Federal Copyright Act. And even though that question has yet to be decided in the courts, in her brief explanation of the veto, Hochul cited the AAP's concerns. And I have that, and I'll quote from that here. Hochul writes that, quote, "While the goal of this bill is laudable, unfortunately, copyright protection provides the author of the work with the exclusive right to their works. As such, the law would allow the author and only the author to determine to whom they wish to share their works and on what terms. Because the provisions of this bill are preempted by federal copyright law, I cannot support this bill. These bills are disapproved." And again, I think what library supporters are pointing to is that despite Hochul's rather certain endorsement of the AAP's claims of federal preemption, the legal question here has actually not been decided. In her remarks, AAP President and CEO Maria Pallante, however, thanked the governor. She praised the governor for taking, quote, "decisive action to protect the legal framework that incentivizes the American private sector to invest in, publish, and distribute original works of authorship." Of course, she's speaking of the Copyright Act. And she repeated again her allegation that the bills in New York and Maryland are some scheme by big tech and, quote, lobbying groups that, you know, are trying to weaken copyright for their own gain. Librarians, of course, are bristling at that suggestion.
The New York bill passed overwhelmingly both in the state assembly as well as the Senate, Andrew. So why doesn't the legislature just override the governor's veto?
You know, it's a fair question, and it's a question I've been getting from a lot of librarians. And I can only say that the answer lies in politics. You know, obviously it was politics that got the bill vetoed, right? And in New York, the political situation is actually fairly complex. You know, for one, Kathy Hochul is finishing out the term of Andrew Cuomo, who resigned in disgrace last year. And she is facing a primary and a general election in 2022. Now, she's the incumbent and she's leading in the polls right now, but not with bulletproof numbers. There still could be a pretty robust challenge in the primary to her. So I think the pressure by these major industry groups clearly resonated with Hochul because she needs their support. She needs their money, frankly, for 2022. But then again, veto overrides in New York are really very rare. And while the unanimous margin suggests that the legislature could easily override this bill, there's a political calculus here too, I'm told. For one, a veto override at any time is politically loaded. but it is especially loaded ahead of an election and an election that's going to have a wide open primary. Remember, the library community may well have to work with Kathy Hochul for another 4 years, maybe more, and she may well be the person they want to work with. So undertaking a veto override or attacking Governor Hochul for the veto now does not really seem like a very attractive option.
Going forward, then, library ebook pricing is now a political question in New York State?
You know, that's a good point. You know, I think it is. I think it always has been. And that's not to be cynical. I think politics were always part of the equation here. But here's the bigger picture. You know, the AAP and Maria Plante in her statement praised Governor Hochul for her veto and for standing with publishers. But if you actually read Hochul's veto statement, it's not quite that strong. You know, she says that the bill is laudable, right? And when it comes to the alleged copyright issue here, she adds the word unfortunately. So observers say that that actually leaves the door open for the bill to be recast in a way that serves the bill's, quote, laudable aims in a way that doesn't necessarily come with the potential copyright baggage hanging over the law via the lawsuit in Maryland. And now if AAP loses that suit in Maryland, you could very well see the New York bill come right back on Hochul's desk without many changes at all. We'll see. But, you know, this time Hochul had reason to veto the bill. She had a concern about the legal challenge. Next time around, maybe that concern won't be there. And again, I also can't stress this enough when it comes to the politics of this issue. The public and a unanimous legislature support an effort to bring fair balance to the digital library market. So even if the AAP manages to succeed and get this law stricken on a very technical legal challenge, the library community is playing the long game here, right? They still have made a point. They still kind of own the issue. And the issue is not copyright. The issue here is the ability of libraries to get fair terms for digital content. So politically speaking, well, just long story short, library supporters kind of have what they need. They have broad support. They have unanimous support in the legislature. What they don't have and what they probably need is a better way to get what they want for the public. And a brute force veto override of a bill that is currently resting on an undecided legal case, well, that probably isn't the way to go. When you have the public and you have a unanimous legislature and possibly even the governor backing you or backing the laudable aims of your bill anyway, well, this is not a Gordian knot, right? This is not something that, you know, is not solvable. You can figure out a way to achieve your aim without violating copyright law. In fact, I think the most obvious way to do that would be for publishers and libraries to find a way to sit down and work these issues out together. I think it's about time that that happened anyway. So two takeaways. The first is that if publishers don't want to see these bills continue to advance or be rewritten in New York or anywhere, then they hold the power to stop it by, you know, sitting down and coming to some sort of arrangement with libraries on terms that librarians think are somewhat fair. They can end this. They have the power to end this right now. And the second thing I'd point out is that failing that, a lot is now riding on what happens in the case in Maryland.
And we will find out more about that case in Maryland because the court has issued a schedule of proceedings for the parties to follow.
That's right. So following a December 21st status conference, as you said, it was a busy time while we were on vacation. Judge Deborah L. Boardman has given Maryland state attorneys until January 14th to file a consolidated motion that will comprise both their forthcoming motion to dismiss the AAP suit and their motion in opposition to the AAP's bid for a preliminary injunction, which the AAP had sought to block the law from going into effect. The AAP reply is then due by January 28th, and a remote hearing is set for February 7th. Now, I'll go back to my earlier point about the preliminary injunction. The AAP had actually sought this injunction, arguing that there would be immediate and irreparable harm if the law was allowed to go into effect on January 1. But the schedule means, since we're having a hearing until February, that the Maryland law, which we should note was also passed unanimously in the state of Maryland, actually went into effect on January 1, 2022, as was set out in the law's text. And, you know, you can read into that what you want, right? Library leaders quipped to me off the record that the sky was probably not going to fall before the AAP's motion is heard. But, you know, this may just be a timing issue, right? The AAP suit was filed very late in the year and you had COVID and other complicating factors. But it might also signal that there really isn't the kind of immediate and irreparable harm that would require the law be put on ice while this question of federal preemption is litigated. However, if the AAP over the next month can convince Judge Boardman that they are an absolute lock to win on the question of federal preemption, then that constitutional injury would be enough to win a preliminary injunction. But again, you and I, Chris, we've been doing this a long time. We know well how complex these copyright questions can be. So that may be a high hill for the AAP to get over. Anyway, stay tuned because 2022 is about to get off to a cracking start in the courtroom.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly Senior Writer, thanks for joining me on the program today. And we look forward to having you with us throughout 2022.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, the King of the World podcast recounts actor and musician Shah Jahan's journey through addiction, identity, creativity, and what it means to belong as a Muslim in America in the 20 years after 9/11. King of the World won the 2021 Golden Crane Award for Best Production from the Asian American Podcasters Association. The show is produced by Rafaelian Media. Rafaelian's founder, Asad Butt, told me about the kinds of stories and whose voices he's planning to share.
When I was growing up in Boston, just outside of Boston, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, there were few, if any, American Muslims on TV, radio, or in movies. And if they were, they tended to be very negative portrayals, terrorist villains, swarthy characters. And so what we're trying to do at Rafaelian is to provide more content, more diverse content. We're first starting with the American Muslim community, and then from there we'll expand to other groups, marginalized groups, or groups that whose stories aren't being told in many ways.
Sharing Muslim American Stories, coming on the next CCC podcast. Our producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.